Chapter 84. Directions from the heads of the family, and they put dummy motions on the paper in the way of other men's motions, and they stalled disagreeable subjects off until late in the night and late in the session, and then with virtuous patriotism cried out that it was too late, and they went down into the country whenever they were sent, and swore that Lord Decimus had revived trade from a swoon, and commerce from a fit, and had doubled the harvest of corn, quadrupled the harvest of hay, and prevented no end of gold from flying out of the bank. Also these barnacles were dealt, by the heads of the family, like so many carts below the court carts, to public meetings and dinners, where they bore testimony to all sorts of services on the part of their noble and honorable relatives, and buttered the barnacles on all sorts of toasts. And they stood, under similar orders, at all sorts of elections, and they turned out of their own seats, on the shortest notice and the most unreasonable terms, to let in other men, and they fetched and carried, and toadied and jobbed, and corrupted, and ate heaps of dirt, and were indefatigable in the public service. And there was not a list, in all the circumlocution office, of places that might fall vacant anywhere within half a century, from a lord of the treasury to a Chinese consul, and up again to a governor general of India, but as applicants for such places, the names of some, or of every one of these hungry and adhesive barnacles were down. It was necessarily, but a sprinkling of any class of barnacles, that attended the marriage, for there were not 20 in all, and what is that subtracted from legion? But the sprinkling was a swarm in the Twickenham cottage, and filled it. A barnacle assisted by a barnacle married the happy pair, and it behoved Lord Decimus Tite Barnacle himself to conduct Mrs. Meagles to breakfast. The entertainment was not as agreeable and natural as it might have been. Mr. Meagles, hove down by his good company, while he highly appreciated it, was not himself. Mrs. Gowan was herself, and that did not improve him. The fiction that it was not Mr. Meagles who had stood in the way, but that it was the family greatness, and that the family greatness had made a concession, and there was now a soothing unanimity, pervaded the affair, though it was never openly expressed. Then the barnacles felt that they for their parts would have done with the Magleeses when the present patronizing occasion was over, and the Magleeses felt the same for their parts. Then Gowan asserting his rights as a disappointed man who had his grudge against the family, and who, perhaps, had allowed his mother to have them there, as much in the hope it might give them some annoyance, as with any other benevolent object, aired his pencil and his poverty ostentatiously before them, and told them he hoped in time to settle a crust of bread and cheese on his wife, and that he begged such of them as, more fortunate than himself, came in for any good thing, and could buy a picture, to please to remember the poor painter. Then Lord Decimus, who was a wonder on his own parliamentary pedestal, turned out to be the windiest creature here, proposing happiness to the bride and bridegroom in a series of platitudes that would have made the hair of any sincere disciple and believer stand on end, and trotting, with the complacency of an idiotic elephant, among howling labyrinths of sentences which he seemed to take for high roads, and never so much as wanted to get out of. Then Mr. Tite Barnacle could not but feel that there was a person in company who would have disturbed his lifelong sitting to Sir Thomas Lawrence in full official character, if such disturbance had been possible. While Barnacle Jr. did, with indignation, communicate to two vapid gentlemen, his relatives, that there was a feller here, look here, who had come to our department without an appointment, and said he wanted to know, you know, and that, look here, if he was to break out now, as he might, you know, for you never could tell what an ungentlemanly radical of that sort would be up to next, and was to say, look here, that he wanted to know this moment, you know, that would be jolly, wouldn't it? The pleasantest part of the occasion by far, to Clennam, was the painfulest. When Mr. and Mrs. Meagles at last hung about Pet in the room with the two pictures where the company were not, before going with her to the threshold which she could never recross to be the old Pet and the old Delight, nothing could be more natural and simple than the three were. Gowan himself was touched, and answered Mr. Meagles, "Oh, Gowan, take care of her, take care of her." ... with an earnest, "Don't be so broken-hearted, sir." "By heaven I will." ... and so, with the last sobs and last loving words, and a last look to Clennam of confidence in his promise, Pet fell back in the carriage, and her husband waved his hand, and they were away for Dover, though not until the faithful Mrs. Tickett, in her silk gown and jet-black curls, had rushed out from some hiding place, and thrown both her shoes after the carriage. An apparition which occasioned great surprise to the distinguished company at the windows. The said company being now relieved from further attendance, and the chief barnacles being rather hurried, for they had it in hand just then, to send a mail or two which was in danger of going straight to its destination, beating about the seas like the Flying Dutchman, and to arrange with complexity for the stoppage of a good deal of important business otherwise in peril of being done, went their several ways, with all affability conveying to Mr. and Mrs. Meagles that general assurance that what they had been doing there, they had been doing at a sacrifice for Mr. and Mrs. Meagles' good, which they always conveyed to Mr. John Bull in their official condescension to that most unfortunate creature. A miserable blank remained in the house, and in the hearts of the father, and mother, and Clennam. Mr. Meagles called only one remembrance to his aid, that really did him good. "It's very gratifying, Arthur," he said, "after all, to look back upon the past?" said Clennam. "Yes, but I mean the company. It had made him much more low and unhappy at the time, but now it really did him good. It's very gratifying," he said, often repeating the remark in the course of the evening. "Such high company." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.